Blog Talk Radio.
Oh. Hey.
Run the jewel.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston, and you're listening to Battle Red Radio. Today, I'm joined by BFD. How's it going?
Well, man, a little RTJ to kick off the show. I dig.
Of course. Yeah, we need some type of music. Well, BFD, did you know that Cecil Shorts III is the greatest player in the history of the Houston Texans?
Wow. So you're just going to whip out the crack pot or crack pipe this early? Yeah. Yeah, it's really, you know, when you think about the game on Sunday, and how can you not say that Cecil Shorts is the third, is like the second best offensive weapon that we've got, and especially when he plays quarterback.
Yeah, I know. I wish he could just start quarterback for the rest of the year.
But you know, better accuracy than Ryan Mallett, that's for shizzle.
Yeah, well, on paper, this was a terrible matchup for the Houston Texans. They were going up against the best run defense in the NFL, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and a blitz game that comes all over the place, which is a problem whenever you have a third-string quarterback there. And this was also bad because the Texans need to run the ball to be successful, and they have the worst running back unit in the NFL. And then additionally, Hopkins is the only way they can move the ball. And like I said previously, Yates has only been with the team for 3 weeks, and in that situation, it's hard to pick up blitzes. But throughout this all, Houston scored 24 points. And BFD, like last week, whenever we talked about the defense and little changes they made in order to turn from the 27th worst defense in the league until I think the 17th they're at now. What changes did you see the offense make on Sunday to be able to go from a team that could barely score 10 points into the team that scored 24 points last week?
I think they were pretty the biggest aspect to me is the offensive line, them being healthy, playing well. Xavier Sofilo easily had the best game of his career on Sunday. And you have to start – that is the basis, especially when we're playing a team like the Jets, a defensive coordinator like Todd Bowles who likes to do what he does, and that's send you show you one package of blitzing and then do something completely different. He is big time into deception in that. And the offensive line picked that up wonderfully. The only real flaw for the team on Sunday was when Yates just kind of fell asleep in the backfield. He held onto the ball too long and allowed the Marcus Williams, I believe, with the safety. Mm-hmm. So that to me is the basis. But the other big thing is to see creativity that I just really did not think that team had. The Wild Bull, as I've renamed it, looked wonderful. Shorts ran it very, very well. The other biggest thing is, and it's what we've talked about all year, we've got one playmaker on offense right now. Throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins all the time. Don't care. Just get it close to him. Don't care. Because his catching radius right now is so outstanding. He is just trolling us half the time with those catches. The one catch where he wasn't actually in bounds, but he caught the ball. He should have never even touched, but he actually caught the ball with one hand. He's just trolling us, or he's trolling the opposition out there with what he can do. He's wonderful to watch. You add those things together, and you know what? You can cover up the flaws of not really having a decent running game. You can cover up the flaws of not having a real NFL quarterback. And I think we did that very successfully.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was the Wild Bull, as you called it. And, you know, the numbers said they had 6.8 yards a carry when Jonathan Grimes and Albert and Cecil Shorts III carried the ball. And both of those guys were exclusively pretty much in that set. And they were able to run that zone read really well off the edge and also get around the tackles. And the strength of the Jets' defense is their defensive line. And so by doing that, they were able to pretty much mitigate them and have them have as little impact as possible. That and also just attacking Revis with Hopkins, who I still call him the third best receiver in the league behind Noah Jones and Brown. But, I mean, he's still spectacular. And both those catches he made, both those touchdowns were awesome. And, you know, they actually had the gall to attack Revis instead of other teams who just assumed that that matchup's a wash and they're not going to be able to get anything out of it. But they actually went after Revis and had success. And, you know, it was really surprising to see. Now, I know, in the kind of more of a big picture way to look at that, was that when Bill O'Brien became head coach, all we heard about was he likes to game plans to opponents. He makes great adjustments at halftime. He'll cut guys who aren't getting the job done. He's a New England person. He'll use his personnel to its utmost strengths. To me, this is the first game where I actually saw any of this type of creativity or innovation in his entire career as head coach. Did you kind of come away from this game thinking the same way, or do you have any other examples from the past year and a half that are examples of innovation that maybe I forgot about because of all the time that has occurred between then and now?
Well, we did show the Wild Bull several times last year, but definitely not to the extent we did in the Jets game. That, number one, was very creative. Is that Bob? Is that Godsey? I can't imagine it's Godsey. Basically, you know, you can see the game plan is throw the ball to Nuke. You know, we can't go wrong there. You know, as far as on offense, defensively, I don't know what kind of impact he has defensively because, once again, this team has looked utterly and completely different the last 2 weeks from a scheme standpoint. So who is responsible for making those decisions? I would love to know. I'd love to be a mouse in the classrooms right now because to hear about who's making these calls.
Mm-hmm. So besides how much, you know, you finally are on the Cecil Shorts, you know, bandwagon, how much you love them, there are some other things about the offense we can go over. And one, I guess, is the running back play. And to me, from what I've seen on film, is that this is the worst batch of running backs in the NFL. None of these guys can break tackles. They can't make anybody miss. They're really timid back there, and they're trying to look for holes rather than just attack for it and make one cut and go. But we have seen Jonathan Grimes play fairly well this year, and it is in a small sample size. Is this a situation, though, where we're talking about the prettiest girl in Oklahoma, or do you actually think Jonathan Grimes is a good running back?
I think he's better than Alfred Blue, and I don't think it's by a small margin. So, you know, maybe we're talking about the you know, prettiest girl in Louisiana. So it's the fact that we still are handing the ball off to Alfred Blue, and he's not even Ron Dane out there. Yeah, he's not even 3 yards per carry. He's not Ron Dane material. And, you know, Ron Dane was a terrible NFL running back. The fact that we still give it to him still shows that we lack a certain amount of creativity. Blue has no burst. He has no vision. I don't even think he's replacement quality at this point. Hulk needs more carries. Grime needs more carries. Hey, and Akeem Hunt knocked Darrell Revis out, so get him some more carries. Let him knock out some more defensive backs.
Yeah, that run he had was pretty funny, too, because Revis destroys him, and then that leads to Brown catching him and throwing him for the first down. And after that, Revis is out, and then they run that run play to the left, and they look over to the right and hit Hopkins down the sideline. And then that made the game 24-10. And so it's kind of like the invisible hand working there to give, you know, Houston some luck to allow that drive to carry on, because now we see Nick Novak in that situation.
Yeah, and I like how you put that, the invisible hand. Yeah, because you took out Darrell Revis, and he was replaced by Marcus Williams at cornerback. And, I mean, that's going from the prettiest girl in Texas to the prettiest girl in Oklahoma, if we're going to keep going on that. So that's a big difference in the quality of play you're going to get from that position. Hey, and you know what? On Sunday, Texas offensive linemen led the league in throwing the running backs first down. That's something you got to brag about.
We'll talk more about them in a second, but I guess based off the Jonathan Grimes question was that Ryan Griffin, I believe, played 40% of the snaps this game. The week before, he played about 76% of the snaps. And since he's been on IR, he's also been kind of contributing in the pass offense as well. Do you see him – how much of an upgrade do you see him over the other tight ends? And is this also the same case where it's a small sample size? He's just better than Greer Graham, and we're just, you know, Houston fans who don't know exactly what to think when it comes to tight ends after all the bad guys we've seen. But do you like Ryan Griffin, and how would you describe his performance so far?
No, I'm not a big fan of Ryan Griffin at all. And let's be honest, if we're going to talk Kendall Lamb got the same number of snaps as Ryan Griffin did. So
yeah,
that's how much
18.
Space they've got in the tight end position. 28 for each.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, Griffin can catch the ball, but he kind of is our team standard now for players. You know, he only had two catches on Sunday, but he's kind of our team standard for tight ends. He's unathletic, he can't block, and he can't catch. So you kind of got the trifecta of suck with Graham and Fedorowicz.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the offensive line now. I wrote an article last week where I watched their performance against the Bengals, and the biggest thing I saw is that they were running wide inside zone, and they were just demolishing the front four of the defensive line. Petco, Atkins, Dunlap, Johnson, all four of these guys were getting driven back, you know, 3 yards with those double teams of Houston. But the issue they have is that they weren't getting to the linebackers well. The running backs are sitting back and not hitting the hole. And so they averaged 3.3 yards a carry. But the game that the offensive line played probably should have said that they should have averaged, you know, done a better job on the run game than what the numbers say. And then again against the Jets, it looked like they were controlling line of scrimmage from what I saw. And Yates was only sacked one time on a play where he held the ball too long whenever there's a blitz from the safety. So are you back in on the offensive line being good? And are you going to join me on the Xavier Suafield bandwagon as well?
It's hard. I mean, that was easily his best game. Easily his best game. The only really negative from the game was Damon Harrison was just so tough. He's become such a great player, and he's kind of a no-name guy on that line too, but he has become really tough to stop. Yeah, he's a machine. So we struggled with him. Otherwise, I think – you know, what we saw an offensive line that was doing a great job. You know, I'm sure if you write another article, you'll talk about what a great job they did on deuce blocks throughout the game. It was just a wonderful job. They were really trucking guys out of the way. There was a couple plays when it was like watching a classic Civil War move. We're just going to create that turn the flank of the entire defense. It was like out of a video game and creating massive holes. I don't remember the question, but the answer is the offensive line looked a lot better. And I think we talked about it. You put Derek Newton at right tackle, you don't mess with it. You put Brandon Brooks at right guard, don't mess with it. Put guys at their natural spots instead of trying to, you know, take Derek Newton and put him in at left guard. That just hurts the team when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched a lot of Suafield this game, and I was surprised. I mean, I guess I wasn't surprised because of how well he played against Cincinnati, but I didn't really see that much of the line as a whole. I was mostly watching him. But he was a lot of fun, and again, the same thing as he was driving guys. I did see a few problems at the second level, but with the second level, what I've seen this year is that you're not going to get the 10-yard runs, the 14-yard runs, the 20-yard runs, unless you block every single guy. But if you're getting that deep drive on the front level, you know, 3 yards, 4 yards, like I said earlier, you're going to get a lot of 4-yard runs, 5-yard runs. And even though, you know, Alfred Blue's back there and he sucks, he'd probably be averaging maybe 1.5 if they weren't playing that well. And so I guess the other thing, like I asked, add on to the question before, but I want to hear you talk about it was, you know, what do you think about Suafio? I know he'll probably, he could be Mikey Iupati. He could be a great guard, but he will never live up to the expectations of if they could to Carr or Bridgewater in this situation because of the impact the quarterback has on the offense. But do you like Suafio now, and or do you think he's going to be a starting guard for years to come?
Well, he's finally acting like it. I mean, it took us a season and a half for him to actually not flat out suck. But what we've seen from these two games is a much, much improved offensive lineman, somebody who is making better decisions, still has a hard time with blitz pickups, but is making better decisions, making better blocks. And there were two very specific plays I remember when Suafio Tuafila was the best guy getting to the second level, the quickest to the second level, and getting to the linebacker. Was linebacker one time, was a safety another time, when he did an excellent job getting his butt out there. So, you know, we can't replace, you know, a Wade Smith and his primer, Mike Brazell. He's not at that level just yet, but he is definitely much improved.
Well, let's talk about the quarterbacks now. T.J. Yates completed a little bit more than 50% of his passes. He threw for 229 yards and two touchdowns. And, you know, both those bombs to DeAndre Hopkins down the sideline. Do you think Brian Hoyer completes these passes?
The pass, especially the deep pass, I think it was a 61-yard touchdown to Hopkins. He underthrew Hopkins by about 5 yards. I mean, that's how bad Hopkins had beaten Revis. Hoyer can get it within 5 yards too, I think. One-handed catch. T.J. Yates has decent short midterm accuracy. You can see how it's not that good. He was right at 50% in this game. So
yeah,
he's going to be limited. Yeah, he's going to be limited in what he can do for you. But, you know, as far as a backup quarterback, you can't really ask for much more than what he did for us on Sunday. I mean, again, you know, the deer blind jokes kind of write themselves with these guys at this point. But, you know, at least he wasn't Case Keenum out there.
Yeah, poor Case. Did you see what happened to him against the Ravens?
I am shocked. When I finally saw the replay, because I kept seeing the comments about it, when I finally saw the replay, you really couldn't tell that Case Keenum couldn't control his body. You couldn't see that. The eye in the sky couldn't see that. The guy couldn't get up.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, like, he was limp, and you see the guard try to pick him up with one arm, and he wasn't getting up at all. And I hate Jeff Fisher, man. Like, what a defensive line talent to have for them to be as bad as they are. I mean, he's a terrible coach who's playing 1990s football. I really wish I could fire him myself, because the Rams should be one of the most fun teams in the league to watch, and so they're middling and are 2 games below 500 and will make the playoffs.
He's an embarrassment at this point. That was the icing on the cake on Sunday. He needs to be gone. He needs to find a different line of work. That was terrible.
I mean, they have 5 first-round picks on that defensive line. 5 of them, and they're not able to stop guys on defense, and, you know, you keep bouncing around quarterbacks, and you still can't run a sustainable offense at all. It's insane to me. But enough about Keenum. We might talk about more of him in a second as well. But
Keenum.
We have a question from Gerbalogic, though, and I guess his wife is a fan of T.J. Yates, and he was wanting for UBFD to break down the strengths and weaknesses in Brian Hoyer and T.J. Yates in this offense.
I think in a lot of ways they're pretty much the same guy. Yates doesn't have any mobility at all at this point. Hoyer still has some. They both struggle with accuracy. There are going to be times when you're asking yourself, who in the hell was the intended receiver on that play? You know, both of them have those qualities, so to speak, about them. Hoyer's escapability makes him a little bit more attractive from that standpoint. TJ, I think, is a little bit more willing to push the ball downfield. He has shown it at times. TJ is kind of odd because he's always been that guy. If he could just improve a little bit more, if he could always take a little bit more intelligent gambles with the ball, then he would be a better quarterback. But he shows why he's a backup, because he'll go into check down mode too. I mean, as far as they're basically the same guy, Brian Hoyer's got more escapability, a little bit better arm. The accuracy in both of them is just not going to be good.
Yeah, I think that's what it kind of comes down to, the difference between the two, is that Hoyer's more mobile, but he doesn't have the arm strength as Yates. But I guess I'd trust Hoyer's accuracy a little bit more and just kind of knowledge of the offense. I think going forward, you'd rather have Hoyer, but again, it's the same thing where you could put any second-string quarterback, third-string quarterback, and have them throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins, and you'll be able to move the ball at least a little bit, because that's how good he is.
Yeah, and you're right. Again, you know, look at the game. Look at the catches. So you take out DeAndre's 61-yard catch, and all of a sudden TJ's numbers look like absolute crap. You know, that's what he did for you on that one catch. And that's DeAndre Hopkins creating 6 yards of separation on Darrell Revis down the field.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're hearing us about J.J. Watts can lead this team to the playoffs now that they're 5-5. Whenever you start reading national writers and stuff. But whenever you watch every single one of these games, it's pretty obvious that Hopkins is the most important part of this entire team. You know, like, the defense has enough talent around Watt where they could be okay without him on the field, maybe, you know, hold a team to 21 points. But without Hopkins, this team isn't scoring more than 10, you know? And he's their only way that they can move the offense and the only viable skill position player they have. I mean, I guess except for C.J. Schwartz III, of course.
You're going to keep plucking that chicken, aren't you? Yeah, but only if he plays quarterback.
Oh, I love it. I wish it was NFL Street, where you don't pick a quarterback at all, and then you get an extra skill player, and then you just throw Cecil Shorts back there. But is there anything else you want to talk about on the offensive side of the ball?
Just that the Nate Washington era needs to be over a lot sooner than later. Put in Jalen Strong, please, for the love of Durga, put in Strong. It's just watching Nate Washington out there is just it's pathetic. It's like watching a zombie with no hands trying to play football.
Yeah, and I was going to say the same thing, too. And the reason why is, like, what we saw on the defense side of the ball. Like, the defense is so much better just because they started playing younger guys rather than these old turds. You know, you see Andre Howell playing over Moore. You see Covington and Dunn playing on third down instead of Wilfork. You see McKinney there every down instead of Tuggle or Den or Bulloff or whatever. You know, whatever those guys are, they suck. So give your younger guys a chance to play now. Have them learn as it goes on. Because having Strong play over Washington might have a few, you know, problems here and there in the beginning of the games he plays, just because of maybe not knowing what routes to run or whatever. But it's gonna play dividends as the season progresses and in the future as well. So why handicap these guys when they should be the ones playing now instead of using these guys who you already know what you have with them?
Exactly. You know, that's I always preach that, you know. Nate Washington gave us 2 receptions out of 4 targets and yet another drop on Sunday. You know, I could do that. I could do that.
And you could throw the ball off to DeAndre Hopkins as well.
I could.
Well, on the defensive side of the ball, this one starts and kind of ends with Watt. This was the best game he's had this year, and he simply abused Breno Giacomini. He led the team with 8 tackles. All of them were solo. He had 5 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks, and now he leads the league with 11.5. And he also had 5 quarterback hits. So, BFD, what was your favorite Watt play of the game?
There was a play when he was getting toward the quarterback. He jumped up to bat the pass. The pass was a little high and was tipped by, I can't remember who it was tipped by us. And he was able to get back to the ball and almost make the pick. That was like everything beautiful about J.J. Watt. The awareness to go for the bat, the awareness to turn around and hustle his ass off like he does. I mean, the guy is, you talk about how skilled he is, the guy is just a nonstop engine. He's a freak. To make that sort of play, there's only one guy in the NFL who can even come close to pulling that off, and it's J.J. Watt.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Mine, though, was the sack that he got against the Brickshaw Ferguson. And the reason why, he was lined up on the right side against Giacomini, and he was just destroying him over and over and over again. And then the Jets take their offensive line, and they shift one gap over towards Watt, and they start getting a double team with the right guard and right tackle. And they stifle him a little bit. And then Crennel moves him to the left side, gets him on one-on-one matchup with Ferguson, who's a very good left tackle. And Watt just rips around him, and Ferguson can't even get his hands on him, and he gets a 2nd sack of the game that way. And I think it's a good example of Crennel finally using him in different situations, how he can change entire offensive line's protections, how it can boil to the point where you have to have your right tackle, you know, have help from the inside like that, so then he can overextend the outside shoulder so then he has to worry about the inside move, so he has the right guard right there to help out. And then for him to move immediately over there and get the sack, off just a really simple move where he's just he's not letting the tackle get his hands on him. It was just beautiful. And it just shows, like, how he can just change a game just like that.
When I was watching that play, what came to my mind was it was like going to batting practice. And you're sitting in the cage, and the ball's coming at you medium fast. You know, you're DeBrickus Shaw Ferguson taking batting practice. And all of a sudden you get thrown into the game, and you're facing, you know, Billy Wagner, and who's going to throw you 100-mile-per-hour heat, and you're just overwhelmed by that much more speed. And that's what it looked like to me. I loved DeBrickus Shaw. He was who I wanted back in the Mario Williams draft. I love the guy, but, man, he was very good at showing against J.J. Watt.
Mm-hmm. And he's been there forever, too. I think he's, like, 32 now, and he's played only for the Jets. And I bet his approximate value is probably, like, 75 or something like that.
Yeah, he's a heck of a good player. He has been. Very steady, very solid. Good guy.
Yeah. Well, then we'll talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick a little bit. And he had some throws deep that were really good. It was kind of surprising by how much they were on target, how they led receivers. And they just had a couple of drops here and there. But as well, we had Kevin Johnson lined up on the outside, Joseph on the other side. The Texans' defense was able to hold the two to combine 120 yards. But I guess more specifically, the Jets threw a lot of throws in the deep center part of the field to attack the safeties. And when I wrote the midseason article, teams threw 14 throws in the deep middle part of the field, and in their first eight games, which was tied for fifth in the league. And so we'll talk more about Johnson and stuff. But first, let's talk about Andre Howell. And how much of an impact do you think he's made in the secondary? And do you think he's good, or is this one of those cases of addition by subtraction, just by the fact that Raheem Morris isn't playing there anymore?
I think a lot of it is that alone, because Raheem Morris had no idea what he was doing out there. He was completely often out of position. He couldn't tackle. He couldn't even try to tackle sometimes. He was playing very disinterestedly. It was something I picked up in the preseason immediately, is he just did not look like he knew what he was doing out on the field. Andre Howell is quick. He is very fast, good long speed. He's got great hands. That was something that he showed off when he was at Kentucky, is that he will pick the ball off. So seeing him get interceptions is not a surprise. My biggest concern, he's a decent safety today. My biggest concern is he is small. I mean, I think he's like 5'9", 180, which means he is not – well, it means he and I are about the same size. And I know how big I am. And the guys that I played against in high school and what they look like today, and I could not imagine that. I just couldn't, especially trying to hold up at the safety position where you want a guy who's bigger. So the long speed helps him. It's going to help him as being a center fielder at safety position. We've seen that playing out in real life pretty nicely. The route that I think it was Brandon Marshall was running the route. He was running the slant. Hal read it. He jumped the mm-hmm. heck out of that slant for the pick. It was a beautiful read and react on that, and he had the speed to be able to pull it off and the hands to pull in the interception. That's what you can see on the good side. I worry about the smaller side, but he's holding up on his own. You got to love it.
Yeah, and he's also cheap, too. I mean, they're not paying him really anything at all because they drafted him like the sixth round. But, yeah, I like Howell back there because in Cornell's defense, I mean, he's pretty much playing center field where he's not having any impact at all in the run game. So as long as he doesn't have to tackle anybody and he can jump routes, play the deep ball, you know, knock down passes, and do all those sorts of things and not to tackle anybody, I mean, he's great at it. Like, he's awesome. But every time he has to actually come up into the box and do anything that way, you know, it's a train wreck from there.
Yeah, it was USMCJA, the commenter. He and I were joking during one of the preseason games about that Howell getting trucked on every play. It was like every running back was hitting the truck stick against him.
Playing Madden 08.
Yeah.
I guess, is there anything else you want to talk about as far as like the cornerback play? I know for me, I want to just say that I was very wrong about Jonathan Joseph. He had lost a step, and that those Bucs games had showed, but he had that veteran savviness to knock those balls away after they were in receivers' hands, and it doesn't seem like a viable long-term strategy. But these last few weeks, you know, he's been playing about 6 yards off the receivers, and he's been pretty much locked down. And I was wrong. He has lost a step, but he just knows how to play the game really well.
And I think that's a very good and fair, accurate statement to make. You know, I said the same thing because we saw his long speed issues in the preseason. We saw his long speed issues last year. And, you know, that's kind of the death knell for a cornerback. The dude is a consummate professional. You know, we see that the guys like Darrell Revis, when they lose their long speed, that can be deadly. And Joseph, fortunately, hasn't quite hit that level yet. So, gotta love the effort he's given this year.
And is there anything at all you want to say about Kevin Johnson? I threw up that, you know, Pro Football Focus post, and he had a negative 2.5 grade in this one. Are you worried about him long-term as a result of this? And is there any analysis you have as far as how he performed on Sunday?
No, I mean, the best analysis he can give is he's a rookie cornerback being thrust into a starting position. He was taking on Brandon Marshall. He took a couple of penalties, one of them being a kind of a smart penalty. He needs to get over his Frenchie Reeves broken neck syndrome. But otherwise, he still looks very, very good as a cornerback, and you got to love his long-term outlook. He's a fun guy to watch, super quick, great tackler. He's got a lot of skills out there.
Yeah, I think my favorite play from the secondary, now that I think about it, is that Quentin Demme's pass interference, where the ball's underthrown by about like 3 yards, and he just stands his back to him and just kind of jumps and like lets it hit him in the back. And I really wish I could make gifts, because that would be a great one to have. That play was
that was Fitzpatrick's throw to a Decker on the left. Yeah, that was a pretty fun play. Sad play. Dead clown play.
And did you miss Fitzpatrick at all?
No, it took me, I think I made a comment during the game thread. It took me 19 minutes to realize how little I actually missed Ryan Fitzpatrick. He is just such a mixed bag. That was before the two picks in the fourth quarter, when he was also clearly concussed. But, the difference between Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brian Hoyer, I can't tell. I mean, the only way – I didn't see the two guys out on the field at the same time, so maybe they are the same person, and Hoyer just puts on the beard and hair. I don't know. But they are about the same guy. It's just it's a very frustrating combination.
Yeah, it was the same thing we saw last year. I felt bad for Jets fans that the fact that this is their hope this year for the playoffs, and then there's one of those teams where if they just had a competent quarterback, they probably win 9-10 games with the schedule they have. But I'll always hate Ryan Fitzpatrick, not mostly because of him as a player, but just the way they did not get a quarterback at all after 2013 and actually decide to use Ryan Fitzpatrick as a starting quarterback. Because remember, whenever they signed him, it was like, well, this will be the backup or the starter for a few weeks as they teach a rookie quarterback how to play the game. But no, he started the entire year and would have, except for that broken leg he had. But man, I do not miss him at all. I miss a really gritty quarterback run, because he's a very good scrambler and you don't really think that, and he just dives head first, takes hits to the head, breaks his thumb, breaks his leg, and gets back up and does it all over again.
Well, yeah, just look at the touchdown, the scramble. I mean, that was a heck of a play.
He was like a ram. Well, I was listening to the telecast, and Rich Gannon, you know, loved to claim that Brian Cushing's one of the best inside linebackers in the game. He's been playing a lot better of late, you know, and just really talked him up the entire time. So my question for you, BFD, is have you seen Brian Cushing play any better at all the past few weeks?
I think Brian was somewhat put into an unfair position at the beginning of the year, because everybody was coming out saying how slow he looked. Well, you know what? everybody looks slow against Jamaal Charles. That's what happened. That's just what it is. So I think, you know, starting off the first game, he was kind of unfairly convicted of looking a lot slower. On the other hand, he's not the same guy. He's not the Brian Cushing. He's not the Brian Cushing of 2013 at all. He is a couple steps slower. That's the truth. He does not have the same ability to get to quarterback. I'm sorry. He doesn't have the same ability to create turnovers, to make a lot of plays in space. He is a different guy out there. To say he's one of the best interior linebackers in the game today, no, he's not. He's not. What he mostly brings at this point is the ability to help quarterback the defense. He's still got the, you know, physical talent to some degree, but he is clearly not the same disruptive playmaker. And I would not put Helm in the top 10 inside linebackers in the league.
Yeah. I think what he pretty much is he's a good tackling linebacker inside the box. If you get him into space at all, it's just doom, and he doesn't have the speed at all to cover running backs or tight ends at all. But if you keep him in the box, he does a good job taking on guards and tackles and shedding and getting to the ball carrier. And, you know, that's viable. I guess the only kind of bad thing is in this defense is you have McKinney, who's good at the exact same thing. So you have two guys who are good doing the same thing. And then if you have any guys who actually have speed, who can get you out in space, who you can throw screens to, you can throw tosses to, then it becomes a problem because you have two guys inside with the exact same skills.
Well, that's why you play Eddie Pleasant at nickel linebacker.
Did you know he played for Houston in 2011?
Who, Eddie Pleasant?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's been around forever.
I didn't realize that. I watched the Ravens-Texans condensed divisional championship the other night, and I saw Eddie Pleasant on the sideline. I couldn't believe it.
He's like a VD. He just won't go away.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I was going to say one more thing about I was too busy being funny to be serious. Oh, well. Oh, that's what I was going to say. PFF has Cushing with 11 missed tackles, which sounds about right. 50 out of 57 tackles. I bet you that is probably the top five worst ratio in the league missed tackles.
How are you able to get the PFF counting stats? Because I saw that you can only pay for their gradings.
Yes, because I still have my license that still goes through the end of the year, I think.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's really stupid they did that.
Yeah,
do you want to talk about how much you love Charles James for a minute, or do you want to move on?
Oh, sure. I'll spend a couple of minutes on Charles James a second. I really think the entire key to these last couple of games has been the reappearance of Happy Sock Guy. I think that if it wouldn't be for Helm, we would be 3-7 right now. There would be car fires all over the city of Houston. That there would be just people throwing themselves off the Transco Tower. I don't think it's called that anymore. It would be a terrible, terrible situation. But by golly, the karma of Charles James II has reappeared in the city of Houston, and all is good.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that at all. But the thing I want to talk about is that this Sunday, Case Keenum, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Matt Schaub are probably all going to start on Sunday. Which one of these former Texans quarterbacks are you most excited to see?
I want to see, at this point of his career, if Matt Schaub can actually make it out onto the field to make a play. Does he have that much agility left in that body of his to actually make it all the way out on the field? That's what I want to see.
I'm going to watch that Monday night game for sure, mostly because I enjoy really bad football after being a Texans fan for this long. And just like it hits November, it hits December, and you get the dog crap announcers, and it's two teams with three wins, just, you know, humping the doorknob. So I think I'm going to watch the game Monday night. And after Schaub retired, or after Schaub, you got traded to Oakland, you know, I wrote that insane 10,000-word year-by-year thing on Matt Schaub, and I reread it the other day.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me? And so after that moment, I vowed to never write about Matt Schaub again. But I think on Monday night I might write like a live diary or something like that as he plays for the Ravens against the Browns.
Yeah, that might be worth it just for the comedic value alone. You know, sometimes you have to look at these things. You know, life isn't serious all the time. Sometimes you just lay back and enjoy something, and I think that'll be Schaub.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, too. But I'm really excited to watch him play again, and especially see him in black, too, because he's like the most un-Ravens quarterback of all time.
Yeah, he's tall. That's about it.
And probably the last time he was in the limo was his high school homecoming. So now we'll do our playoff watch. And now that Houston's 5-5, we can look past the AFC South at the moment. So all these odds are Corner Football Outsiders. And so I'm going to name the team, the playoff odds, and then the strength of schedule. So we have Indianapolis first. They have a playoff odds of 50.5%. Their strength of schedule is -5.1%, which is 26th easiest. Houston's odds are 38%. Their strength of schedule is -1%, which is 19th. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, here they come, meow. 16.3% is their playoff odds, and they still have the easiest remaining schedule in the NFL at -12%. And now when we look outside the AFC South, Kansas City has a playoff percent of 72.7% and a strength of schedule of -6.7%, which is 27th. Buffalo's odds are 30.6%. Their strength of schedule is -0.1%, which is 18th. And the Jets are 22.3% odds, remaining schedule of 2%, which is 15th. And then lastly, Pittsburgh has a 63.1% chance to make the playoffs. So when we look at this, it's that even though Houston's 5-5 and they're in it, you know, when you look at the record, they're about, you know, 40% less chance to make the playoffs than the Chiefs and 25% or so less than the Steelers. So it's possible, but it looks like it's highly probable that they'll have a chance to make a run through the wild card.
Yeah, no, this is going to come down to winning the division. I really strongly think that, you know, yes, there is a good argument to be made that they can get through the wild card. We'd have to really play some big ball. But I think if we're playing big ball, we take the division. So, you know, it's going to come down to we still play the baby-eating sister fuckers, the glitter kitties, and the clots to end off the year. And that's our season, you know. We can talk about things, Patriots, that sorts of thing. Yes, winning those games clearly will help, duh. But, you know, it's the last three conference games. That is our season right there.
Yeah, I feel like these next games are kind of like a buffer or whatever, where they could probably lose it, but they can't win the division these next 3 weeks. And so it's just kind of like stay even with Colts, stay about even with Jacksonville, and then if you win your last three games against the AFC South, you get in. And so we have a question from Texans fan Cowboy Land, and he was wondering, BFT, what are your own personal odds so the Texans make the playoffs, not that soulless evil computer?
Well, I am a soulless evil computer, really. it's really not fair to the computer to compare me to it. I think right now, going on pure gut instinct, I think we're dead on 50-50. This is a complete – the defense is a completely different looking unit. If you would have told me – if you put on game film from the first three games of the season to the last two – and say, that's the same team in the same year, I tell you a lying liar and kick you in the nuts.
And just change the colors or something?
They're ridiculously different. Ridiculously different scheme, athleticism, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you start there and you say, wait a minute, this is all of a sudden, this is the defense we thought they'd be. So the big concern still is offensively, especially with Arian Foster out, you know, we don't scare anybody. You know, I'm surprised at this point teams don't take three guys, put them on D-hop, ignore the tight end because they're just going to flail the ball away anyway, and go after the quarterback because, what, Alfred Blue's going to beat you? So, yes, I realize he called a touchdown pass. It was a trick play. But, you know, we got no talent on offense in the skill positions. So, you know, it seems like it'd be pretty easy for a decent scheme to shut us down. We will see it with New England because New England does know how to scheme. So how we do against the Bills, how we do, you know, against the Saints is going to matter. But Klotz, Glitter Kitties, the ESS, that's what it comes down to. That's 8 wins. 8 wins could take the season. So 50-50.
My personal odds are probably about 25%. Just because until they win in Indianapolis, I don't think it's ever going to happen. Like, I'll, you know, whatever age I die, I'll be dead before the Texans win in Indy is how I feel right now. And also, we haven't – Andrew Luck's not back yet, and whenever he comes back healthy, that offense should be a lot different. Another question that Texans fan Cowboy Land had, BFD, he said in the rematch, would you rather face the banged-up Andrew Luck or the 40-year-old second-string zombie?
Yes. The ghost of Matt Hasselbeck, you know, it's easily, I'd rather face Hasselbeck. I mean, you know, let's look and see how we lost the game in Houston. We lost the game with our crappy defense and our offense that couldn't do anything. And, you know, Hoyer's floater being the single worst pass in NFL history, that hopefully doesn't happen again. Hopefully that's an outlier. So the other big thing is the Klotz have lost Harry Anderson. He was
playing
defensive
really well.
Yeah, he was playing outstanding ball, and he was ripping us apart. So that is a big loss for them. That's a huge loss for that team. So they're banged up like we are. That's a big loss for them. Yeah, definitely Hasselbeck. It's not even a question for me.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I'm going to add is that this is what I want. I want the Texans and Jaguars, they play week 17. I want to see that game be for the division. I'm so tired of this, you know, Indy being at the top and can they beat the Colts and all that crap. Now, screw that. I want to see Bortles and I want to see us go against Bortles week 17 and whoever wins that game makes the playoffs. And I wish it was like whoever, I wish that would make that team like 7-9 too. And so that crappy team gets a home playoff game the next week. But that's all we dream, I guess.
But the funny thing is, you know, the Glitter Kitties are playing good ball. We're playing good ball.
Yeah. We talked about this,
you know,
like 3 weeks ago, too. It was funny,
right,
too.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they have the easiest remaining schedule in the NFL.
I was thinking about how awesome we were, but whatever.
Well, this week the Texans are playing the New Orleans Saints. And the Saints are 4-6. They just fired Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan, my fault, coming off the bye. And the weird thing about the Saints defense is that they invested a lot of draft picks, a lot of resources, a lot of cap space, and they just haven't had the results at all. Now, I haven't had a chance to watch any film, or I haven't watched one Saints game yet this year. Shh, don't tell anybody that, though. But do you have any reasons why this defense has been so bad this year?
Yeah, they can't cover anybody. That's the bottom line. They couldn't cover a bed. they don't do a great job getting to the quarterback. And you look at the talent they've got out there, they should be better. But they just really suck at a lot of the core aspects of a defense, especially, you know, you bring in Brandon Browning as, God, I get that name right. Yeah. You bring him in, you expect him to be a shutdown cornerback? I mean, have you done no scouting? Are you seriously going to go out and pick up a penalty machine who's probably the slowest cornerback in the league and you're going to put him on an island and think he's going to cover anybody?
One man coverage.
Oh, jeez.
Because he was playing the cover 3 zone and he had Earl Thomas, you know, covering his back and he was able to be successful and jam guys at the line. And then you put him one-on-one man coverage and he gets beat.
And it's not tough to beat him. You don't need to be. You don't need to have the quicks to beat him, and he's gonna foul you anyway on the way by. So yeah, that was a terrible signing. They do have some talent. There's Jordan Cameron. There's Stephon Anthony. Stephon Anthony is a great, fun guy to watch. Real talented middle linebacker, fast as hell. Will tackle anything. Kenny Vaccaro, Bus City. Delvin Bro is their best corner. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Delvin Bro is their best cornerback, and he's just, you know, he's replacement level. Browning out there, Brandon Browner, that's it, is just terrible. So, poor personnel decisions. That's on Rob Ryan, probably. That's why the Saints really, really suck defensively.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing that I want to talk about. So Drew Brees is 36 years old. He's 6 in DYAR, 6 in DVOA. This year he's thrown 2,800 yards, 20 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions. Next year's the last year of his deal, and his cap hit is $30 million. If they come or trade him, they save $20 million. And last year in the draft, they used a third-round pick on Garrett Grayson as a quarterback from Colorado State. So you heard here first on BRR, or maybe something we talked about before in the past on BRB, but I think Drew Brees is going to be the quarterback of the Houston Texans next year. I don't think he's going to stay in New Orleans. I can't see the Texans using a high draft pick on a quarterback, and that draft pick we thought was going to be a top five, top 10 pick is going to be something maybe around like 20th, 22nd, and I could not see this team actually trading up in the draft to take a quarterback. So I think next year they're going to get another veteran guy and then they bring in a younger guy to back him up. And I think they're going to go for Drew Brees in the offseason.
Yeah. And this is the part where I agree with you. Here's why. I think no matter how you look at how this year ends, the taste of the first 8 games is very sour. No matter what we're going to do in the second half, you know, it's going to matter, yes, but you can't ignore those first 8 games. You can't ignore how unprepared and how unprofessional this team looked the first 8 weeks. You cannot ignore leaving Arian Foster out on the field in garbage time to get hurt and basically end his career with the Texans on an injury that he should not have been on the field. You can't ignore the way the quarterback situation was handled. You can't ignore how poorly this team has looked this year. We weren't a whole lot better last year. So I do strongly believe, even with Bob McNair as the owner, that Bob is playing for his contract, that he is, or coaching for his contract. So do you, this is a rant. I heard at a restaurant today. It was great because it was like listening to myself rant. The guy was going on and on about how, you know, is Bob so arrogant that he thinks he can go out and get the Ryan Fitzpatricks and Brian Hoyers of the world? And he even mentioned Matt Cassell. Seriously, it's like listening to myself. And go out and get Ryan or Matt Cassell and have these guys be NFL starting quarterbacks and that he's going to succeed with them. Is that arrogance or hubris? And that's something I've complained about repeatedly, is I think it's arrogance. So next year, does Bill O'Brien say, look, I can either draft a quarterback and that's what's going to put me over the hump, and that way I'm not out of here in 3 years. Or do I make the decision, do we go out and maybe go get Drew Brees? Because, you know, he might be 37 years old, but I don't, you know, this is my career. This is my coaching career on the line. Yeah, and he can still operate. Still has enough movement, still has the arm. So that's why I think Drew Brees is the quarterback for your 2016 Texans, because – Bill O'Brien does not want to take the gamble on drafting a guy. And Bill O'Brien is going to go for it all because he is playing for his coaching NFL coaching career. And I strongly believe that.
Yeah, I didn't think about the aspect of it. I just saw them mostly as they're not going to take a quarterback, you know, after what we've seen so far. And even the draft picks can be higher up. And how much longer are you going to be able to go along with these has-beens and digging through other people's, you know, trash? You have to eventually answer the quarterback situation. And, you know, I forgot about the aspect that, you know, we did think that O'Brien would get one more year no matter how badly this year went. And we both agree, I guess, is that we think that, you know, Drew Brees is a legitimate possibility for him to be the Houston quarterback. And also, if you just look at the cap space, too, like, there's no way the Saints are going to pay him $30 million next year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Well, I guess the other thing about this matchup, too, is that the Saints are 8th in offensive DVOA, and they are 32nd defensive DVOA. But they also have a lot of really quick skill players, and C.J. Spiller and Cooks and Ingram, and the Texans have had trouble playing against quicker players this year. Do you see this causing a problem, and do you think the Texans have actually turned a corner whenever it comes to their tackling ability?
I think they've largely turned the corner. I think that's the most fair thing to say because, you know, they're not completely sucking out there right now. I think a lot of it, though, also has to do with this is one thing that's really stuck out at me. Look at also the difference, the way that the Chiefs schemed against us, the way that the Falcons, the Dolphins schemed against us, and the way that the Jets and the Bengals did. So what we've also seen is we've seen a change in the way that teams are attacking us.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs, Dolphins, Falcons all, A, got rid of the ball quickly, B, pounded us up the middle. Teams have gone away from that. Chris Ivory got 8 carries on Sunday. That's ridiculously poor scheming.
Yeah, that was silly. Because Russell was getting beat, too.
Oh, God, he was getting beat right and left. I think he had one decent play all game. So we've seen a massive scheme change from teams. And so will the Saints come out and do the quick things to us? They have, like you said, they've got Ingram, they've got Spiller, they've got Brandon Cooks, who's ridiculous. Willie Snead's been playing good ball. And Marquez Colston is still a matchup nightmare for any team, even at whatever he is, 48 years old. So if the Saints, and they can still scheme offensively, Sean Payton's an offensive mind, if they come out and do that to us, they're going to give us real fits. And where we struggled with is we struggled with the quick passing game, forcing our safeties, cornerbacks, and linebackers to tackle in space, and we struggled with stopping the run up the gut.
Mm-hmm.
So do they go back to that? Who knows?
What matchup are you looking most forward to in this game?
Brandon Cooks versus whomever winds up playing at slot corner for us. Brandon Cooks is so ridiculously fast. He is just – he's in that freak category of guys. He's exactly the kind of guy that we struggle against. And if we can stop him, it's going to go a long way towards something that resembles success. But, man, he is scary quick.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's going to be Brown and the opposite side of the field, though. I want to see Browner against Hopkins. I just want to see Hopkins, have 200 yards receiving and some more one-handed catches and just jumping over him and getting defensive pass interference penalties and come back to balls that, Hoyer underthrows by 4 yards. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most in this game.
Yeah, seriously, if Brandon Browner's on the hop, that is going to be point and laugh football.
Yeah, you ready for prediction time, though?
Sure.
The Mighty have really fallen hard. We're 5-5 now. And we both of us picked the Jets to win last week, mainly because we thought it was a defensive just like nightmare for the Texans offense. And they actually innovated and did some things. And, Cecil Shorts is going to be in that Ring of Honor one day. That number 18 is going to be retired. But who do you have in this one?
I have been flipping back and forth on this one.
This is a weird one.
For a while. It's a weird one because what it is, it's the exact opposite strains. It's our weak-ass offense against their weak-ass defense, and their very strong offense against our very strong defense. So one of those is going to give. I'm going to go with the Charles James experience because I think that he is the man who's turned this team around. And if you think I'm being sarcastic, uh-uh. Because, look, he is taking snaps from A.J. Bouye, who sucked. There's no nice way to put it. James has been a baller out there on defense, and he's easily our best special teams player. No, Charles James II turned this team around. I am 100% convinced of that. And the schemes also help, too. So I'm going to go with the good guys on this one. I'm going to go 27-23 Texans.
Yeah, I'm going 31-27 Texans. And I think it's just because Hopkins against Browner, the Saints defense may be even worse than the new defensive coordinator as he figures out kind of what he has. And then he's going to be calling plays that he hasn't really called before. But I think it's going to be kind of a shootout. I think Watt does just enough as well on the other side of the ball. And it's going to be more of a fun, scoring game, a game that we haven't seen really at all this year from Houston and their opponent they're playing against.
Yeah, I mean, this could be, an offensive explosion for the Texans.
Which would be, 24 points was last week. So, and what did you say your final score was again?
27-23, good guys.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you want to add at all?
No, I think I'm good. I talked a lot tonight.
Yeah, it was a good time, like always. Well, for those of you guys listening tonight live, I want to thank y'all. And I also want to thank you to everybody who asked questions for us tonight. And if you enjoy the show, tell all your friends and family. Thanksgiving's this Thursday, and you have a lot of people around you haven't been around, whether if you're, you know, 23 and going back home and going to the bar with all your high school friends and you're Texans fans, you should tell them all about Battle Red Radio whenever you're sitting there at the Thanksgiving table and you don't want to talk about Donald Trump or Syrian refugees and want to change the conversation to something a little bit more table, dinner-worthy. You should talk about Battle Red Radio as well and bring it up and just tell all your loved ones and friends about how great we are. And also, if you listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review us as well. We're going to be back next week at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. I'm Matt Weston, and thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. And thanks for being on tonight, BFD.
Woo!
Are you ready for some music?
RTJ, baby. Ha ha.